This is a KSHSAA production.
20 seconds remaining, and now a steal here in the backcourt, and a dunk! Two-handed stuff, Matt Jones! Exclamation point on this one.
Block down to the other end, misses. Shot won't go up the gun, and Eudora comes from way behind and goes crazy.
Hello and welcome to the first installment of the KSHSAA podcast. I am Jeremy Holliday, Assistant Executive Director for the Kansas State High School Activity Association, your host for what we hope will be many and successful podcasts for the Activity Association. A little bit about what we're doing. We just decided that we wanted to come up with another form of communications to our member schools, student athletes, parents, and fans all across the state. Each episode, we will involve content from various coaches, media members that cover those teams, administrators, officials, and KSHSAA staff for information regarding current events that might be approaching. We hope that we can give you a 2 to 3 to 4 podcasts each month. Just depends on the type of year, but we'll just see what the demand is. Listeners are encouraged to follow along with updates about the podcast on Twitter and Facebook. Since you are listening, you obviously found out that the podcast is on our website at KSHSAA.org, or you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. We will welcome your questions each week. Another reason we wanted to start this podcast was so we can open up the conversation about what the Activity Association is, how to enhance educational activities, and promote the goodness within them. So go on there to our Twitter or Facebook and ask a question for our podcast, and hopefully we can answer it. We can't promise that we can get to every question, but we can certainly get to as many as we can. All right, as we get set for the 2014-15 school year, we see that summer is about wrapped up. I'm looking out the window, and it's a sunny day. It's sure to be a hot one. But we understand that fall practice begins August 18th for football, cross country, volleyball, Scholars Bowl, debate, boys soccer, girls tennis, girls golf, and gymnastics. There are a number of dates and events that have to be prepared for each school. And we just wanted to let our listeners know and the fans out there what it might be like to get inside the mind of a high school athletic director as these fall sports and activities begin. So we sat down with Olathe Northwest Athletic Director Jay Novacek to see what his life is like this time of year. Jay, welcome to the podcast.
Appreciate you guys having me. Good afternoon.
Hey, before we get too deep into things, I just want to talk about Jay Novacek's Twitter game. It's if you haven't checked it out yet, get him on Twitter, follow him for all the updates on Olathe Northwest. But I got to ask you real quick, with the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, the YouTube video, was the water even cold? Because you didn't even act like it fazed you. What was the deal there?
It was cold. It was freezing, actually, and my two boys were the ones who had the pleasure of dumping it off of the deck onto my head. So it was very cold, but it's a worthy cause, and I challenged the other athletic directors in Olathe to follow the lead here a little bit, and they've all accepted it. I know Jason Herman at Olathe North has already done it, and Craig Taylor and Clint Albers at Olathe East and Olathe South have told me they're going to follow suit soon. So the water was cold, but it's worth it, and my wife immediately said, part of the deal is to donate money also. So we've donated some money to ALS, and hopefully they find a cure soon.
Yes, it is a very good cause, and I think it's taken the nation by storm. I thought it was really neat how you did that with the other Olathe athletic director. So very good deal there. But like I said, follow him on Twitter to get all those updates from him. He does a very good job. Jay, kind of give us an example of, as we get going through, we have fall practice starting today, August 18th. What kind of process did you lead up to, and I know this starts way over in the summer and even into spring, maybe in the fall, of these fall activities, scheduling all the practices and the games. What's the process you use and how you keep on task of everything?
Well, number one, take it day by day. That's the biggest thing, or you'll find yourself drowning in a hurry. I have a great assistant, Jennifer Sanderson, who we work hand in hand, and she helps me out tremendously. But, a lot of the things are just the minutia of it all, making sure that, you have everything, all the games scheduled, home and away is correct. You have officials, you have workers for those games. you know, people that are trained and know what to do. So when it's game times, they know their job responsibilities. You know, everything from making sure everybody has a physical, you know, before the first day today has been the biggest thing that we've been trying to get accomplished here before today. You know, we have over 380 physicals that have been turned in, and just going through those and making sure that they have the concussion form along with that. And then in Olathe here, they have to have a transportation and a drug and alcohol form along with that. So just making sure that we have all of our T's crossed and our I's dotted, and you know, getting checking eligibility is another big thing. Making sure everybody, you know, we do it through their once we have their physical, we go back and make sure that everybody is, you know, passed all the classes that they need to in order to enjoy their sport. And today, I've spent a good portion of the afternoon going through the TE forms because we've had some kids move in, and you know, getting those sent off and signed off and making sure that we're good to go. So. It is a lot of work, and you know, it's just one of those things that you try to make a list at the beginning of the day of the things you absolutely have to get done today and the things that you have to get done by the week, and, you know, the things you can get done later down the road. But, you know, we got all our coaches hired so far, and for the fall, so we're ready to roll there, and we're getting them all through Acacia, you know, with the Rule 10s and getting them signed off. And you know, we're looking for a good year. It's, you know, it should be a good year, and we're excited.
Yeah, and you mentioned all the events and the meetings that you're going to go to. Just give us a little insight as to how you make yourself visible to the players, to the coaches, and even the parents, whether it's through meetings or whether it is just a Twitter reach out, or how do you try to stay connected with each of those
well,
people?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because, you know, you have such a wide variety of people who have different ways that they stay connected with the school, you know, and grandparents and parents, you know, they like to see you face to face. And, you know, obviously as an athletic director, you're going to go to a lot of activities and games and be out in the forefront. You know, we have a freshman orientation night that we did last Friday, and so I was able to speak on athletics and getting involved in front of, you know, 350 parents or so that showed up out of our 550 that are in our freshman class. And so, you know, that's a good way to you know, introduce yourself to them, and they love to come up and introduce themselves to me afterwards, and you know, just touch base and tell me who their son or daughter is and what sport they play, and ask me questions about, you know, physicals or how they get signed up. And so that's always one great way to do it. With our coaches, you know, you have young coaches that you know, some of them, the young guys, you know, they're into technology and tweeting and Facebook and all of those things. And then you have some of the old school coaches who, you know, want to sit down and meet with you face to face. Before, we have an in-service, and what I do is a head coach's luncheon during one of our in-service days. And I sit down with them, and I have a head coach's handbook that I give them that has all of the Acacia forms or forms they would need from the Olathe School District in their packet. I bind it into a book, and we kind of go through it and, you know, set up our expectations and let them know some deadlines as to what they need to do to meet those. And then I also put it online. I put it on our T drive, which is a shared drive for all of our teachers, so that they can have access to those documents should they need them. So I try to cover both bases, you know, the guys that like to have the hard copy, and then the ones that are a little more computer savvy and enjoy it that way. With the athletes, you know, I think the biggest thing is, you know, a lot of times they really will reach out to you through social media. And, you know, you'd mentioned Twitter earlier when we first started this, and you know, it is a great way to instantaneously get in touch with your student body, your athletes, your parents, you know, your fans, everybody that you know, follows Olathe Northwest. And, you know, we do things from, you know, silly things just, you know, that happen throughout the day to great accomplishments to wins. And, you know, every time that we have a game of varsity sport, we're tweeting the scores and trying to get some highlights in there. You know, it's grown to be something that I never really realized how big it would become. But, you know, we have about 2,000 followers or close to 2,000 followers now. And, you know, that fluctuates, you know, depending on the season. But there are a lot of people who are very passionate about every high school, and ours is no different. So they really do enjoy following it on Twitter. And the kids are, that's the way they communicate, you know. And so if shout out a kid's name, you know, they immediately are going to retweet it or favorite it. And you know, to kind of watch that grow is fun. And I get to know exactly what they're thinking and if they like something, or if, even if they have a question, they'll ask that too. So.
Yeah, it's a great way to stay connected for sure. If we look at, I was just looking ahead at the schedule, and September 2nd, Olathe Northwest has a varsity soccer game, sophomore football game, JV volleyball and freshman volleyball, and that's just stuff you're hosting that day at Olathe Northwest.
Right.
So,
yeah,
how do you tackle that animal?
You know, it's tricky. You know, we're a big school. We have about 2,100 students. So, you know, fortunately, our facilities, you know, are made for that size school. You know, we have three gyms, and you know, we have couple football practice fields, a sub-varsity football game field, and some sub-varsity soccer fields on our campus. And then we have our district athletic complexes, College Boulevard athletic complexes right across the street from us. And so, you know, the trick there is just making sure that you're a good host. You know, I think as an athletic director, it's really important that you're visible to all of those teams that are visiting your school. Sometimes it might be the first time they've been in their building, and sometimes they come in on a yearly basis. So, you know, my job is, first of all, get quality people that are working on that night just to make sure that they're going to be self-sufficient as much as they can and know exactly what their job is. And then be welcoming to those teams coming in to visit, making sure that they're set up and have everything that they need. We have a athletic trainer, Steve Hawkins, who does a fantastic job here, and he's always willing to jump in and help both home and away teams wherever you know, he can. So after that, and you know, we get everything set up, make sure that we have our officials checked in and everybody's ready to go there, you know, from there, just you know, meeting and greeting with the fans and kind of light the fuse and let it go. That's basically what you do, and hope it all works out.
Oh, yes, we do hope so. Well, before we let you go, just give us a quick fall sports preview for the Ravens.
You know, I'm excited. We had our volleyball team brings back almost every single one of our players from last year, you know, we made it to the state tournament and finished in the top four there. So, you know, I think this could be a very exciting year for our volleyball team. I'm excited to watch them get going. Our boys soccer team is a young team, but they're going to be very competitive you know, they've been working very hard this summer to get themselves in a position to be successful on the soccer field. And I'm excited to watch them. Our football team, just walking around the hallway, you know, we have Coach Chip Sherman is our head football coach. This is his second year, and you could definitely see having him in the building for the full year in the weight room. We have added some big, humongous gentlemen to our football team. So I feel very good about that as well. You know, we're in a tough city. We always have good football teams in Olathe. And Olathe North is you know, probably one of the teams favored to win state. So, you know, we're looking there and building every single day. And we're very excited to get our football season started. And we open up with Hayes, who's coming in to play us September 5th. And I know they have a great quarterback that's going to K-State, so we're excited about that as well.
Well, that sounds good. And, Jay, thanks for joining us, and best of luck to the Ravens this fall.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Jeremy.
All right. We thank Jay for taking the time to give our listeners a little insight into his world and the exciting school year that is sure to kick off there for the Ravens. Looking back at some past events that happened at the Activity Association this summer, on August 6th through the 8th, we hosted the 82nd Annual Coaching School Clinic in Topeka, Kansas, where over 700 coaches gathered throughout the state to talk about their respective sports they may coach. It's a great clinic for people that are first-time coaches, multi-sport coaches, because we have classrooms all throughout the hotel where a coach may visit a volleyball session and learn what he or she needs to do or some new tactics that are being used on the court. And then they might go down the hall to see what is on tap for basketball this year, some new schemes that might be happening there. Talk about the X and O's. So it's all right there in the hotel for them to understand what's going to come up for that year. We like to thank all the presenters and the attendees of this year for another great year of the clinic. One of the presenters this year was Coach Warren Seitz. And as we get ready for the upcoming football season, we know that it's still August, and we know that it's still going to be a hot one out there for those kids on the football field and even in the volleyball court and cross country and so on. We wanted to sit down with Warren, who is the head football coach at Nemahal Central and the athletics director. And you might have caught that. I did say Nemahal Central. It's with the closing of Baileyville B&B, we've got a new name to the Acacia member schools. And so we talked with Warren about how the Thunder are getting ready for the season and how the community is transitioning with the closing of the school and the beginning of a new.
Warren, just explain to us, where football practice starts here August 18th, and we're in the mid of the August heat. What, as a football coach, steps do you take, whether it's all summer or whether it's just going to get started this in a couple weeks, towards getting the kids ready for that, the heat that they're going to experience, the humidity, just the steps, whether it's a week by week or a plan process or just examining the kids, what does Nemahal Central do to get those, to get the kids ready for Kansas heat?
Say that our plan process begins at the beginning of the summer, and that we hope that the kids themselves get out in the heat and get acclimated throughout the summer. A lot of them play baseball. A lot of them play basketball, which gyms are pretty hot in the summertime. And a lot of our kids are farm kids, so they'll be out in the field. So that isn't too much of a problem. You know, when we start running and conditioning and stuff like that, we've done it different ways. This year we did it throughout the summer. I really think at times, to be honest, that kind of hurts your program because, you know, when it comes July, these kids are wore out. Right. And so what we'll probably do in the future is maybe start conditioning a little bit later, or some of the coaches here have had good ideas of doing football-type activities where they're getting some conditioning, but working on football skills also, so it's just not running to be running. Now, we do play some games sometimes. The kids will like the games and get conditioning in different games that we play. Once practice starts, you know, we take the precautions. Obviously, it's a good idea that we don't go in pads right away, number one. The second thing is we will go at night instead of right after school, you know, the heat of the day. Even to where if we would have to go under lights, we would go on the game field and practice on the game field. We always make sure that we talk to the kids about dehydration, you know, and that they need to stay hydrated and steps that they can take, and always make sure that they are aware of when they might be feeling fatigued, and the coaches can identify that. We have trees. We're lucky we have trees close to our practice field if there's an incident. And we also buy a kiddie pool that we had heard a few years back. And if we ever have a situation, a kid can jump in a kiddie pool. We've been lucky that, you know, and the other thing is that the coaches need to understand that you cannot get in shape in one day. You know, you don't get out of shape in one day. So it's a process. And even through camp, you know, I guess another idea that we've had and implemented since I've been at Nemahal Central was that we'll go the first 3 days without pads. We'll go right after school and do some meetings and some conditioning then, and then come back at night and practice again. And that's our form of two-a-days. In the past, we had did it the whole week, so we would do that conditioning, you know, when they were just in shorts, and then come back and practice in pads. Right. And that's worked for us too. So I think there's a variety of things that you can do, right, always keeping in mind the kids' safety.
Well, and you talked about two, you touched on two-a-days, and I think one thing that we've kind of heard throughout the state is, you know, years ago when we passed the rule that you could work with them during the summer, we saw that maybe some coaches aren't doing two-a-days anymore. They're just going to the, you know, one-a-days fine because they've already had that summer preparation with them. So is that, do you recognize that throughout the state, or is it something you've adopted? Did you used to do two-a-days? Or?
You know, a long time ago when I started, we did two-a-days because practice started before school, and I think that's why people always did it. Well, now practice is starting after school starts, so you can either go in the morning and after school to get a two-a-day in, or you can go after school like we do and then later in the evening to get a two-a-day, some semblance of a two-a-day. But you're right with the rule changes and being able to work with the kids and playing a lot more 7-on-7 and stuff like that. These kids, most of them going into camp, know the schemes already.
Right.
And so, you know, you don't have to spend as much time, maybe a two-a-day that you might have spent in the past. And I'm not really opposed to not having two-a-days at this point. The last couple of years with practice starting after school, I've been okay with that. Because of the organizational aspect of it, you know, we see kids, we start school this year on Thursday and have school Thursday, Friday, and then start practice on Monday where we check out, you know, we can make sure we got their physical and all their information. We have parent meeting Thursday, Friday we have pictures, and then all that stuff is put aside and then you can start practice. And so I'm not opposed to how it is set up right now.
Right. And do you, you're in the school during the day, so do you monitor how the weather's going to be, you know, after school? Does it change your practice plan if you see that, oh, man, we're in for a hot one today? Do you just alter it completely, or do you, how much do you pay attention to that day?
We pay attention to it. You know, when I was at Topeka West in 501, you know, we used to go into the heat plan, and they would do it at any point in time, and it made it difficult because a lot of our kids took buses. Although our kids still take buses at Nema Hall Central, we do take into that fact. And there might be a day where we don't wear pants, you know, and we just go with shoulder pads and helmets, shells like that. Or we don't wear shoulder pads either and do some special teams and stuff like that.
Right.
We've done all of the above and shortened practice, you know, all of those steps to help keep the kids safe.
Right. Okay, so we're not Nema Hall Valley anymore. We're Nema Hall Central.
Yes.
So, if for people that don't know, Baileyville B&B has closed down, and some kids have come to Nema Hall Central now. They did have a co-op with baseball and Nema Hall Valley, Baileyville. They co-op to have a baseball team. That kind of helped your transition? And just tell us about how that's gone for you and what you think that's going to help the football season this year.
I think that the co-op in baseball and softball has helped. You know, it's given kids opportunity to play baseball that hadn't before. It's, you know, to tell you the truth, a lot of our kids know their kids already. And the thing that the districts have in common may hurt the district the most, and that is both districts, or both schools, I should say, because we're one district now, have a lot of pride in what they're doing, you know. And you know, it was Nema Hall Valley, and you know, the people of Baileyville thought it was all Falcons, and that was the only way to go. So coming together has taken a little time, but the kids, I think, are good with it. You know, actually, it's the parents and the grandparents that have their rooted, you know, biases more than the kids. So it was inevitable, and it's happened, and you just have to play your cards as they are right now and do the best we can with that.
Well, it's good. Good luck to the Thunder this year.
Okay, thank you.
It is certainly tough to see a tradition-rich school like Baileyville B&B closed down, but we are hopeful the two communities will support and prosper better than ever as they get started with their football season against a league rival on September 5th in Sabetha. Jumping back to the first part of Warren's conversation, he talked about how conditioning and staying hydrated is very important for a sport like football, especially when you get those pads on. One thing we wanted to do here on this podcast was have a sports medicine tip of the week or sports medicine minute. So luckily we have a certified athletic trainer here in the office and Brent Unruh, so he will give us a little sports medicine tip.
With the start of fall practices firing up here in just a few more days, we thought it'd be a good time to just remind everybody of some different heat precautions you want to be thinking about. The main thing is every school needs to be sure you have a heat plan. Understand, you know, what type of regulations you're going to look at, what type of policies you want to set in terms of when you can practice, when you can't, what kind of modifications you're going to have in place. The first thing you need to know is what the heat index is. And the heat index is a combination between air temperature and relative humidity. It's basically what the air feels like. So knowing the heat index is going to help you determine if any modifications need to take place during practice. And you can find the heat index by going to the lookup tool on the front page of our website. There's also a chart we have in our sports medicine section that shows you how to know what the heat index is at your specific location. Once you understand what the heat index is, you can make any necessary modifications. It may be shortening practice time. It may be going without gear if we're talking about football. But you need to make some modifications if you're up in the danger zones. Now, the heat index is also very important, not just for football, but for any sport going on, whether it's indoors or outdoors, such as volleyball, soccer, tennis, cross country. All these sports need to be taking precautions if you're trying to practice in a period of real intense heat. Another important thing to remember with your student athletes is to progress gradually into your practices and into your activity. Understand that not all of the students are in the same shape. Some of these kids maybe haven't been doing a lot in the summer, so they need to have kind of gradually work into some of this activity. You don't want to try to push them too fast too soon. Be sure that wherever you're practicing at, you have an area where if kids do get a little overheated, they can cool off. It's ideal to have an area of some shade, whether it's with some shade trees, and maybe you set up a large tent, something like that, but somewhere where an athlete can go if they start getting too warm. Ideally in this area, if you had a cold tub, whether it be just a large kiddie pool filled with some ice water or maybe a stock tank you're using, but just an area where if a kid really started to get overheated, they can cool off rapidly. That's very important if heat exhaustion or heat stroke starts taking place. Some other options if you don't have access to tubs would be like an ice chest full of ice towels. That's another good way for students to cool off. So if you start to notice any problems with your athletes, and a lot of times it might start in the form of heat cramps, which usually take place in the lower extremities, but sometimes will move up through the core of the body, through the abdomen. That's an obvious sign that the child's probably getting dehydrated and overheated, so they need to sit out, and they need to calm down and cool off and hydrate. Heat exhaustion is a little more serious, and a lot of times with heat exhaustion, you're going to notice the athlete maybe starting to feel sick, maybe getting extremely fatigued and getting to the point where they're dizzy and they really can't function. If you start to notice athletes like this, get them cooled down at your cooling area, get them settled down and cooled off as quickly as you can, and make sure they're just relaxing and cooling off. If you start to notice that the child is not cooling down, they're still having a lot of problems, and it's been a few minutes, it's never wrong to activate your EMS system if you're not sure. If you're unsure of the situation and you think a child may be overheating, activate EMS, call 911 if you don't have any access to any other healthcare in the area. It's always better to be safe than sorry when it comes to these heat issues. Another thing to keep in mind in terms of prevention is hydration. Make sure they have access to water constantly. There should never be any restriction on water intake throughout a practice or throughout the day. So if a kid needs to get a drink, let them get a drink. Water's good. If you have access to any type of sports drinks like a Gatorade or a Powerade, those are good options as well. Also encourage the kids when they're not practicing, when they're at home, to be drinking water, Powerade, Gatorade, and to be eating good, not to be eating a lot of high-fat meals, to be eating, you know, just some good balanced nutritional meals. Another thing to remind them of is to avoid all caffeine. It's really important during the times of practicing in this intense heat that they stay away from caffeine, the energy drinks, sodas, all that stuff. They just need to stay away from, because that's not going to do anything but possibly set them up for more problems. So hopefully with a little bit of common sense and a little bit of education to the student athletes and just understanding your district's heat policy and heat plan, everybody will get through this the next few weeks safe, and everybody will stay cool. And good luck to everybody, and we wish you nothing but the best, and don't ever hesitate to call the office if you have any questions.
All right. Thank you, Brent. His official title is the office manager here in the Activities Association, but his knowledge in the sports medicine world is valuable on many levels. That sound means it's time to meet our featured Keisha Registered Official, and today we sit down with Michael Swoboda out of Topeka.
All right, here with Michael Swoboda here on the Keisha Podcast and our featured registered official. And Michael, well, welcome to the first ever Keisha Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jeremy.
Just a little background about Michael. He's registered in four sports. Okay, we got volleyball, basketball, football, and softball. Michael, you've been with registered for a total, I think, is starting your fifth year overall. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, so we have football coming up this fall. Tell us a little bit about why you officiate football and maybe why you incorporate the other sports as well.
Well, I started doing football my sophomore year of college. I moved back to Topeka, and my dad, who had worked football years ago and had been out, asked me to come back and be on a crew with him and some of his buddies. And I'd worked basketball and softball before that, but never really football. And kind of got started that way. I think it's a good way to give back to the school and to the kids, and a good way to get a little exercise, and it's also a great challenge.
Yeah, and you speak about your dad. Tegan has been with us for a number of years. When we talk about officiating, we always try to get new people started, and you're a relatively young official in Kansas. Can you explain to us if it was just your dad or somebody else that might have mentored you to become a better official, and how that process worked for you?
Yeah. He's been great. He obviously got me started in all the sports and has mentored me along in everything. Got me started in basketball when I was 12 years old and kind of never looked back since. And he's really instilled the love for sports and love for officiating in that sense. Kind of his mentor, Dave Epperson, is also a guy that I really look up to and worked my first basketball and softball games with. And once I kind of got going and I worked a little bit more, Josh Tanking and Kurt Losey were the guys that taught me a lot about the ins and outs of the scheduling process and the traveling process. So I really, those four guys are mainly the biggest mentors to me.
Is there any father-son rivalry on the quarter field when you're officiating together, or is it mainly good times?
Oh no, it's always good times. we worked football together for a while, and I was the back judge and he was the line judge, so we communicated a little bit. But then last year I moved to head line, so we communicated across the field, you know, on every play. We were always looking at each other, always made eye contact, always, you know, and there'd always be some funny faces made or some comments that went unsaid, but I knew what he meant, or type of plays that happened. And same goes on the basketball court. We're obviously closer, and those definitely happen on the basketball court.
And Michael, you mentioned that you moved back to Topeka when for college, and right now you're currently a student. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, I go to Washburn.
So and going to Washburn and registered in four sports. That's an all year round gig. So, kind of explain to some people how you as a college student manage your time, but also fit in the officiating aspect of your life.
Well, I think that officiating is a great way to make extra money in college. I mean, hey, I can schedule my classes in the morning. They can start at 8, 9, or 10, and I'd be done by 1 or 2, and perfect time to rest or go to the gym or do something else before I have to leave town or go to an assignment. I mean, it works out great. Now, obviously, I don't really have time for another job and part-time job like a lot of college students do, but I think doing all this officiating fits in well with that.
And I agree with you. I officiated in college as well, and it's a great way to stay connected to the game and earn a little extra money while you're in college, and you can tailor your classes to fit that aspect. Kind of tell us, Michael, your favorite part about officiating.
It's really a good challenge for me. You start out at a lower level, and that's challenging at first, but then it becomes easier. So you go up to the next level and the next level, and you know, the challenge just becomes better. You work, you know, bigger games, better games. The pressure, you know, I like that kind of thing. I know some people don't, but I like feeling the pressure and knowing that I can come through and do the right thing when it comes to it. Especially like basketball, because it's nonstop action. It's just, you know, there's may or may not need to have a call made every 5 seconds, every 10 seconds. So I just like that nonstop action. You're always moving, always running, always thinking.
Oh, it keeps you in shape, that's for sure.
Yep.
Kind of take us to a day. Okay, so we got a football Friday coming up. So what's your daily routine? Whether you have class or not, or we'll say you do have class on Friday, but I don't know if you do or not. But just take us a daily routine on a football playing Friday for you.
Okay. Well, first off, I'm a really health conscious person. I try to eat healthy. I try to exercise a lot. So on a game day, if I know I have to leave town at a certain time, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, I'll definitely make sure that I have when I'm going to eat planned out, my meals planned out. When I'm going to go to the gym, just because, you know, I like to maybe go ahead and get a sweat going before I go to work that night. And so I'll make sure that I do that as it fits in with my class schedule. I think I have 2 classes on Friday this semester, so I better check. Class starts Monday. So.
Yeah.
But no, I'll make sure that I have, you know, I know when I'm going to eat. I know I usually try to leave town on a full stomach. I don't like to show up to a site on an empty stomach. That's never a good feeling. Try to go to the gym on a game day. Obviously, I'll already have my travel arrangements made out earlier in the week, but I'll probably double check with the driver, with my partners. I'll text them or call them, or, you know, we're usually always in contact, so I'll know where to meet and what time I need to leave the house. I always have my bag packed. Another thing my dad taught me, you always triple check your bag. Never want to show up to a game site without something. That's always, I don't think I've ever done that before, knock on wood, but can't imagine that's a very good feeling.
Yes, yes.
So that's always good to be prepared.
Well,
usually game days are really about preparation, honestly.
Good, good. You have football. You're registered in football and volleyball this year. I saw you were doing volleyball in 2012. You didn't register again this year. Are you still doing volleyball at all for us?
No, I haven't registered in volleyball the last couple of years. Try to work more off nights for football, and also just try to concentrate on my studies a little bit more.
Yeah,
but yeah, I did do volleyball a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think the last time we crossed paths was state softball out in Pratt. Michael was a state umpire for us at 4A Division II softball. If you could, Michael, kind of just explain that feeling or that experience working a state tournament. As well as the inaugural 4A Division II softball state championship. So what was that like?
Well, working a state tournament is a huge honor. I mean, it's always a good feeling when that email comes in that you've been selected to work. That's just, you know, you work hard all year for that moment. And you know, you're going to go out there and work with great guys, work with great partners. You know, obviously this is Pratt's first year, but man, they did a great job. The site, I believe it was the Parks and Rec Department for Pratt treated us great. I mean, we were treated, you know, not, I wouldn't say better than other places I've been to, but hey, it was top notch. And working the championship game, that's, like I said, it's also a great honor. It's just fun. Go out there. There's a couple of good teams. Just another softball game. Go out there and work some softball.
Yeah, well, we look forward to having you back at the state tournament, and Bruce Pinkle out there in Pratt did a fantastic job hosting those officials. Just, you know, one closing thought before we let you go. Being the college student and working the games as an official, what's your number one piece of advice for someone in your situation that would like to get started or who is just starting?
Hey, I would say find somebody you know that works. Find a mentor. Find somebody that you can go talk to about stuff. Help you get started. Tell you where to go for meetings. Tell you who to contact. I mean, tell you even something as simple as what kind of uniform to buy. And somebody you can study rules with. Somebody you can listen to stories. There's Acacia's good with that. They have the meetings listed on the website and ways to get registered. So it is a good way to. Good way to get started when you're young.
Yeah, see, and that's very good advice, Michael. And when you register with us, we will always put you in touch with an area supervisor or a league commissioner in that area to pair you up with another experienced official to get you started. Well, Michael, thank you for joining us today. We look forward to seeing you this fall and in the spring to come.
Hey, thanks, Jeremy. Good talking to you.
Officials are very valuable to the purpose of educational athletics and the time they give outside of their normal everyday lives, and it's much appreciated by all coaches and fans and student-athletes alike. If you're interested in becoming a registered official, just please visit our website and click on the Officials tab. Registration is currently open for all fall sports, but the deadline is fast approaching in late August. It's a great way to stay connected to the game that you once played, stay in shape, and maybe earn a little extra spending money. Staying on the topic of officials, we know that it's about to start the football season, so those football officials are getting geared up for the season ahead, and Assistant Executive Director Mark Lentz has been out on the road to conduct rules meetings every other year. It's a face-to-face meeting or an online meeting with our registered football officials, and this year it's been face-to-face, so he's been touring the state. So we sit down with Mark to talk about how those meetings are going and rule changes that you might see on the football field this year watching on Friday night.
All right, we're joined now with Mark Lentz on the Acacia podcast. Mark is the Assistant Executive Director and Administrator of Football here in the office. And Mark, we know you've done 9 rules meetings and you got 9 to go. Just tell us a little bit about this journey through Kansas that you've had the last month and what exactly you deliver at those meetings for those officials.
Just like you said, Jeremy, we've completed 9 of those meetings, and from the eastern side of the state all the way to the western side of the state. And these meetings right now being conducted are meetings with our registered football officials. And we'll do 18 of these meetings, so halfway done, go down to Chanute is the next one to attend, and that'd be tonight, the 18th. And so, you know, we're trying to go over, you know, some different policies of the KSHSAA as well as some of the new rules, the changes, so that we get some of those things taken care of and some of the information out to the officials, that they hear the same information that every official's hearing from the eastern side of the state all the way to the western side of the state, so that we have consistency throughout those rules. In addition, we'll talk about the points of emphasis. Obviously, there's a reason they're the points of emphasis through the National Federation, as well as some reminders from last year's rule changes, so that we just have clarification, take care of any questions that they may have as we progress through this year.
Yeah, and you mentioned rules changes from last year, and if we look at this year's rule changes, there was 10 football rules changes, and I'd like to just touch on a couple of them, and these two were basically risk minimization rules. You define targeting for the officials, and we also define defenseless player. Just give us a little insight on those two changes.
Right, and you know, with targeting, it's not a big surprise to most people, since the targeting rule has been in the National Football League for a few years now, as well as in the at the college level. And especially now with USA Football's big promotion of heads-up football, you know, this is all an area of concern for a lot of people nationwide, especially with the increase of concussions that you hear about constantly and the scrutiny behind that. The one thing I will tell you is that because of a lot of these initiatives, we're seeing a decrease in concussions, especially those and the legislative laws that are in every state that with the management of concussions. So targeting was enacted this year, voted on by the Football Rules Committee, and it's a good rule change. Obviously, it's going to be, you know, something that's going to be hard to be consistent, something we'll work on year one, just like in the National Football League, where they have a targeting rule, but they also have instant replay to correct some of those errors. You know, NCAA Division I also has the instant replay, but in the Division II level of NCAA, NAIA, the junior college rankings, they do not have the instant replay. So obviously they're going to get some of those calls that may be incorrect, but those calls are made for the minimization of risk, as you mentioned. So the same with the high school level, and that's what we're doing. We're basically, you know, the targeting rule is taking aim, or what we're looking at is a player who takes aim at the head and neck area of an opponent. And that can be obviously a defensive player, or that could be an offensive player. But if they are taking aim at that area, then we've got a concern, and that does increase the risk of injury. So we look at that, and in our rules meetings, we go through many different indicators for officials to look at. You know, be it you know, did an individual launch at that area of the body? Did they, you know, crouch with the intention of going at and aiming at the head and neck area? So, and that can be done not only with your helmet, that can be done with your shoulders, that can be done with your elbow, your forearm, your fist. So you're looking at many different aspects, but the key to the whole rule is that taking aim part at that area of the body.
And that's good to know for the fans watching out there on Friday nights and just for the officials so they have a better definition of what they're to look for. Moving on to the next rule change with the kickoffs, and that's another risk minimization rule change. We look at there's a certain number of players on each side of the kicker, and they can only be 5 yards away from the ball. And Mark, we see that this could be similar to the college rule that they passed a few years ago, but tell us how it might be a little different in your perspective.
Yeah, it is different just a little bit. And basically, we had a couple of states who went out and have done this exact thing, what this new rule suggests over the last couple of years, and then brought it to the Rules Committee with an idea of, again, minimizing risk to athletes. And what the rule basically states is, you now have to, and it all starts when the ball is marked ready for play on a kickoff until the ball is kicked. You now have to have at least 4 players on each side of the kicker in 11-man. That'd be 3 in each side in an 8-man game. But that starts from the point when the ball is marked ready for play. There has to be 4. Now, a kicker is designated once he is more than 5 yards back. So if we kick from the 40, therefore if they're at the 35, he would be the designated kicker. Now, if you had all players lined up between the 40 and 35, then it opens up a little differently where you no longer have designated who the kicker is. So therefore, once the ball is kicked, then that rule is in effect. If there is a violation of the rule, then it's an automatic, the whistle is going to be blown by the official. It's going to be a dead ball play. It's going to be called an encroachment foul, which would be a 5-yard penalty. So they'll back it up 5 yards. Basically, what you're trying to do is decrease the number of hits that you may have on a kickoff, especially your onside kick where they're overloading one side and you have, you know, a disadvantage for those individuals trying to recover and more of a risk of injury. And I think may increase some other things that may take place, but I think it's a good start. You've seen what the NFL did. The NFL moved their kickoff up, right. And what's that done? That's led to more kicks out of the back of the end zone. Well, instead of having the rule there, they're just basically kicking everything out of the end zone, and you're not having very many returns, which has decreased the number of injuries. So, you know, it's taking a look at it. Well, you know, is there a chance that changes in the future? You never know, but any time you can do something to minimize the risk of your athletes, I think that's a real positive.
And that's what you'll see with many of our sports at the high school level of rule changes is having a lot to do with risk minimization. We don't want to jump too far ahead in the season. As we know, we're just getting started. Today's the first day of practice on the calendar for us. But we do want to introduce, we have 2 new state sites. Pittsburgh State will be hosting, and then Hummer Sports Park is going to come back and host the state football for us as well.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. You know, we've got some interest from a lot of different places within our state, and I think we need to share those opportunities. And it's not that anybody's done a poor job of hosting, because nobody has. Everybody's done a great job. They've taken the initiative, and they're excited about hosting. But, you know, you constantly get requests, and I think you've got to look at those and offer opportunities to everyone. And obviously, you know, Hummer Sports Park offers an excellent venue for the 4A Division I. The location is excellent. I think you're talking about, you know, a central part of the state in that classification, which is very important. You know, you don't want to have one school have to drive, you know, a greater distance than another school. Obviously, there's still those potential things that can take place. But it is a great venue. They are welcoming the opportunity to host, and you know, and they will for the next 2 years, and I think they'll do a terrific job. You know, Pittsburgh State, again, offers a premier facility, just like, you know, we have many Division II schools in our state in the NCAA, and those schools, you know, do a terrific job of hosting. The venues are good. Mm-hmm. The facilities are great, and Pittsburgh State's just another one of those venues, and I think they'll do a terrific job. It's the CVB is very much involved in this, as well as the university. And, you know, they wanted their opportunity again. It's been a while since they've had the opportunity to host. And, and they look at, you know, welcome that opportunity. And you know, when you look at Class 5A, you know, you've got a bundle of schools in the Kansas City area and another bundle of schools, obviously, in mm-hmm. the Wichita-Salina area, you know, that corridor of the state. And we felt like, you know, the drive to Pittsburgh would be somewhat equal, mm-hmm. you know, for those areas of the state, for those schools to drive to Pittsburgh. And again, they've asked for it. They have came in many different times to visit, and we welcome them to do it, and I think they'll do a great job for the next 2 years.
Yes, we'll look forward to it as well. Well, thanks, Mark, for joining us today, and we'll look forward to talking to Mark later on in the playoffs maybe, and definitely when wrestling gets going.
Sounds great. Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks.
The first football playing Friday is September 5th. As I mentioned earlier, we encourage you to go out and support your hometown towards a successful football year. The next segment on the podcast is something that we'll look to do each week, and that is invite one of the state's media members to join us on the podcast to talk about upcoming events and the seasons ahead. And for that, we go to Brett Marshall out in Garden City so he can discuss a couple conferences out there.
And Brett Marshall joins us here from the Garden City Telegram. And Brett, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks a lot, Jeremy. It's good to visit with you, and the high school sports season is just around the corner.
It is just around the corner, and we were just talking leading up to this about your summer and how things have kind of just started to get going, and you just got finished a big pro-am out there in Garden City. Tell us a little bit about that event.
Well, it's a great event. It's called the Southwest Kansas Pro-Am, and it's the longest continuous running pro golf tournament in the state of Kansas, 35 years now, and it brings golf professionals who aspire to play on the PGA Tour to this area. They get a chance to play with amateurs for a couple of days, and we have 250 amateurs, and typically we'll have anywhere from 60 to 100 golf professionals come in. And you know, we've had U.S. Open champions like Lee Jansen, British Open champions like Stuart Sink, Jim Furyk has played in the tournament here through the years. Tom Weisskopf, a British Open champion, played here in the early years. It started in 1980, and it's a great, it's a fundraiser for our newborn intensive care unit at St. Catherine Hospital. And over the years, they've raised nearly $1 million for the equipment and staff education at the hospital. So it provides a really wonderful thing for the community and for the healthcare industry around here too.
Well, that's good. A good thing for Garden City out there, and it sounds like it's a well-respected event throughout the country, really. And and speaking of the community, I guess we'll just kind of get going on maybe a little football preview here with the Western Athletic Conference. And you know, the name that everybody is kind of throwing out there in the West is the quarterback over there in Hayes and Alex Delton. And he's being talked over here in the eastern part of the state because he's signed with K-State. So maybe a little preview with Hayes High football and some other leagues and or schools in that league.
Well, I think everybody obviously is pointing to Hayes as probably being the preseason favorite in the WAC. You know, we call it the wacky whack out here because you never know what's going to happen, you know, from one week to the next. It seems like there's built-in rivalries within the five schools. And of course, they're the five largest schools, you know, west of Salina and Hutchinson. So I think it takes on an interesting personality because you've got Liberal and Dodge and Garden all within an hour of each other. Great Bend's only a couple hours away, and Hayes is a little over 2 hours away. So, you know, Hayes-Great Bend rivalry is huge. Obviously, Dodge City and Garden City with the hatchet game, it's the last regular season game, and that's pretty intense. And then, you know, Liberal just, I think, kind of has a rivalry with most everybody. So it's always a little unpredictable, but I think Alex Delton obviously probably is the top name coming back, and rightfully so. I mean, he's a talented young man, blessed with great speed and quickness and strength. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. You know, we've had some coaching changes in the WAC. Hayes has got a new coach, with Bo Black moving from Great Bend. Great Bend's got a new coach, and Liberal will have a new coach. So three of the five schools will have new coaches. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, their systems and how they blend in with the talent, you know, at each of the schools.
And we look at we talk about new coaches, and we also just have a new format this year with the first ever 4A Division I classification, and Hayes does fall in that classification, and they'll be in the District 8 with Abilene, Butler, and McPherson. I guess, is there any talk about that classification opening up in that part of the state?
Well, I think, you know, if you talk to the coaches, everybody's all obviously interested in to see how it maps out with splitting up 4A. You know, I personally don't like it, but that's just my personal opinion. I think, you know, we've got too many classifications. It gets watered down. And if you look truly at 4A, your powerhouses in 4A historically over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years have been probably some of your smaller schools in 4A, you know, Andale and Bueller and Holton, all, you know, I believe, are in Division II. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. You know, I hope it comes out good, you know, for the sake of the teams and the schools and the accomplishes what they want. You know, I tend to think that we had a pretty good setup, you know, before. You know, I would be a strong advocate for a nice overhaul of the classifications, just because I would like to see more schools in a classification. So state championships maybe mean more than they do. They always will mean something. But I think when you win something with 64 schools versus 32, you know, it does carry a little bit more meaning. The accomplishment, you know, the depth of it. And I've always thought that 3A and 4A were the two hardest classifications to win, and because of the 64 schools. And so, I don't think that the actual game competitions are going to get watered down, but it certainly makes the path, you know, one less game, you know, to the championship. So it'll be interesting to see how it maps out. You know, we don't have very many 4A schools out, you know, in this part of the state. So it'll, I think people will be paying attention to it. So it'll be interesting again to see who gets through the regular season and then gets into the brackets, you know, for coming out of the districts.
You're right, and predominantly we'll see a school like Hayes play, you know, those 6 and 5A schools to gear up for that 4A Division I playoff.
I think it will be a huge advantage. I think it will be a huge advantage for Hayes once they get into the postseason, you know, if they come out of that district. You know, because when you're playing the Dodge Cities and Garden Cities and the 5A Liberal and, you know, Great Bend, you know, it sets you up for being able to see a different level of player than the UIC in 4A.
And as we stay in this conference, let's just talk about this. It might be a little early preview for the Hatchet game, but go ahead and give me your Dodge City Garden City matchup.
Well, I think on paper, if you're looking at it, I think Dodge probably has more kids returning that were starters last year than Garden. It's always an intense game. You know, you can throw the records out, you know, when they play. This year's game will be back over at Dodge, and Garden City graduated 26 seniors, including Grayson Temple, who's now at Pittsburgh State and was the MVP of the Shrine Bowl a few weeks ago. And so Garden's got a little bit of a retooling job to do, but Coach Brian Hill, you know, has done a really good job, you know, with the program since taking over. This is his fifth year, and, you know, they've got a bunch of young kids, you know, who have a lot of goals and objectives. And, you know, and again, Garden's got one of the most talented high school players in the area, too, in Caleb Tramp. You know, he's a 6'5", 210-pound wide receiver, and he set a bunch of school records last year for receptions and yardage, more than 50 catches, more than 1,000 yards. And so he will be a target, you know, for whoever's going to be the new quarterback. And that'll be the real key for Garden, I think, who's actually going to take the snap, you know, when the season gets started. And Garden has a very tough opener. They travel to Olathe East on September 5th. And Olathe East has a ton of kids coming back from their playoff team last year, so it's a real challenge for the season opener for Garden.
It will be a very challenging game opening season for Garden, and then they obviously they end with Dodge City, so a district game to finish off the regular season will be an interesting schedule for them. Moving on to more of the 4A Division II in the West, we go to the Great West Athletic Activities Conference, and you know we see schools like Hugoton and Holcomb in the same district, and then we got Colby and Goodland in the same district as well. What are some outcomes you expect to see in that area?
Well, it's going to be it'll be an interesting year with some of those schools because Kent Teeter has moved from coaching at Goodland to coaching at Holcomb. So he's staying within the league and within the Great West. And his son was quarterbacking at Goodland, and I'm assuming that he'll be contending for the starting quarterback job at Holcomb since Tucker graduated from Holcomb. Hugoton will have a new coach coming in, and so it's a little uncertain, you know, where Hugoton fits in, but I think you can figure that Goodland's going to be competitive. Colby, you know, will be competitive. Holcomb should have a good core group of kids coming back, and they'll be pretty good again. You drop down to 3A with Scott City, and they've got a lot of kids coming back, a lot of skill position returners, and Glenn O'Neill is, you know, one of the best coaches, I think, in Kansas, and he's only lost 12 games in 7 seasons, it's a pretty good.
Right, I'm sorry to interrupt, but on the topic of Scott City, we have, you know, the last 2 years they've gone very far in the playoffs, so runner up, and then substate the next year. You mentioned Coach O'Neill's a great coach. What has he done in the last few years to ensure their deep runs in the playoffs?
Well, they put together a very good program from the ground floor up. You know, they've got youth football, you know, where the kids are playing in the fourth and fifth grades. They play in a league here in Garden City. And they get a chance to, you know, work with those kids at an early age. They bring them up through the middle school program. And, you know, Coach O'Neill's got his system in place at the middle school level with them. So by the time they get to the high school, you know, they're familiar with the system, the plays, the what kind of defense are they going to run, the weight room. They do a great job in the weight room. And so, you know, I think he reloads every year, and the kids buy in. And there's a great history, you know, in Scott City football dating back, you know, 25, 30 years ago. So I think that that's one of the reasons for the success, and I think the kids respect Coach O'Neill and the staff. And it doesn't hurt that you have some talented kids coming through. You know, some people forget because he's playing basketball at Wichita State now and Ron Baker. But Ron Baker was probably the best football player in this part of the state when he was a senior in high school 3 years ago.
That's very true.
And probably had some offers to play D1, D2 football then. And so he was just that good of an athlete. And it's not unusual, you know, to see Scott City, you know, reload with new kids and still be very competitive. I think people were surprised that they made it all the way to the sub-state last year.
Well, and a constant that you kind of see, and you've mentioned it here with what we have, 6 or 7 schools between these two leagues that we've talked about that are getting new head coaches, and Scott City's head coach O'Neill for quite some time. That consistent basis that they have is definitely a factor in their success.
Well, and you're not going to want to forget about Ulysses either. I think we would be remiss if we don't talk about the Ulysses Tigers and Coach Jason Kenny, who I think he's entering his 13th season coaching there, and he's also the athletic director. And he's probably got the best running back in this part of the state, in Ian Rudzik coming back. He's a 6'2", 225-pound junior-to-be. He plays linebacker on the defensive side, and you know, he ran for almost 2,000 yards and 26 touchdowns last year, Jeremy. So we're looking for big things from him. He's a big, bruising running back that's got pretty good speed. You know, he ran the 200 meters in track last spring, as well as throwing the shot put and discus. So he's one of those combinations of speed and strength. And a little bit I've heard people kind of not completely compare him to, but they said that he reminds them of Lance Lewis from Scott City many, many years ago, who went to Nebraska and played and had that combination of strength and speed.
Well, that's good insight to the Tigers' 2014 season there. I appreciate that. And they'll be in with the district of Mulvane, Rose Hill, and Wellington as the season gets going.
Well, and they played Buehler closer than anybody else in the playoffs last year in the first round.
Correct. That is correct. And Buehler is the defending state champion. We kind of switch tracks here. We'll kind of go to the volleyball portion of the fall. I guess we'll just stay in the Great West Activities Conference. We have Goodland last year who made it to the state tournament. We have kids returning from that team. What do we look like for the volleyball season in the Great West Activities Conference?
Well, you know, again, Goodland and Colby are kind of on the fringe of our coverage area, so I don't know really who they've got coming back, but you can always count on those teams being really good and competitive. Colby the same way. Doesn't matter what sport you've got with Colby's girls, they seem to always, you know, produce, you know, good quality teams. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Colby's girls, you know, being pretty good in volleyball. And Goodland's always competitive too, but, you know, Scott City will have a new volleyball coach. But I think Holcomb and, you know, will have a good team. They've got one of the best setters coming back in Taylor Denniston, who's also a terrific basketball player in our area. And Cayenne Eslick, who's the coach's daughter at Ulysses. She's a 5'11 senior outside hitter, and she was one of our best volleyball players the last two seasons. And she returns for her final year. So I would venture to say that Ulysses will be, you know, very competitive and maybe be one of the favorites, you know, for the GWAC this year.
And if we look at the five schools in the Western Athletic Conference, you were saying earlier that in your 19 schools that are in your coverage area, we haven't seen a state volleyball champion. Is volleyball going to be on the rise there soon? Maybe we have Great Bend carrying the torch in the West.
Well, I think Great Bend, you know, is probably, based upon what they have coming back, would probably be the preseason favorite. Garden City, I think it's going to be a rebuilding year for them. They lost a lot of seniors off of their team. So, and I unfortunately, one of the best volleyball players for Garden City last year, Jamie Birnbeck, she tore her ACL this summer playing AAU basketball. So she will miss the entire volleyball season, and they're hoping to maybe have her back for after the first of the year for basketball, because she's probably one of the best basketball players we've got in this area too. She's a 5'11 senior guard forward type of player. So I think, you know, Great Bend, it's always competitive within the WAC in volleyball. It just seems like when they get to the postseason and they have to go and play the Mazes and the Wichita schools, they just can't quite get over that proverbial hump, you know, to get to the state tournament.
Yeah, and we hope that she does have a speedy recovery for basketball. It'd be great to see her on the court. Well, Brett, sounds like you've already done your homework for the season. I don't know what else there is for it to do for you this year, but best of luck this fall to your team there at Garden City and the Telegram. And any parting thoughts for us over here as we start the fall season?
Well, if people are interested in Western Kansas football, they should show up at Olathe Stadium on September the 5th for the season opening night, because Hayes and Olathe Northwest play at 5:30 and Garden City and Olathe East play at 8 o'clock. So you get a dose of doubleheader football with two Western Kansas teams out of the WAC playing two Olathe teams, you know, in the season openers. And I think that would be an exciting night for any football fan.
That will be an exciting night indeed. Well, thank you, Brett. We'll stay in touch, and best of luck.
Have a good season, Jeremy. Thanks.
Thank you.
That will wrap up the first installment of the KSHSAA podcast. I thank you for tuning in and listening. Be sure to submit those questions. Be looking out for the Twitter announcement and Facebook to submit those. Stay up to date with the news and announcements that are on our website, and follow us on Twitter. Until next time.